Good morning, everyone. As you see, my name is Andrius Bielskis, and I represent Lithuanian foundation called Damos, Institute of Critical Thought, together with my colleagues Jolanta Bielskienė and Nida Vasiliauskaitė. And my title is provocative, actually. See whether I'll meet the provocation. It's entitled "Death Can Dance: The Resurrection of the New Next Left." But what I really want to talk this morning here is a couple of things. Say a couple of things about Lithuanian left and how I see it. Also say about our own movement, which is called the Lithuanian New Left, which I think changed the landscape of perception of the left considerably in Lithuania, but also raised the issue of crisis of the left, and why we are in this crisis, and so my argument would be that the provocation, which is inscribed in the title, lies in my claim that left is dead, or that it's, but that we can still resurrect, and that, well, that can dance. So I'll start without further ado. To put it mildly, it has been accustomed to argue that the political left is in crisis. The leading public intellectuals, from Slavoj Žižek to Stephen Lukes, progressive politicians and grassroots activists, have been lamenting the weakness of the left for two decades, ever since the collapse of Soviet Union. What is especially surprising about this fact, about this lamentation of the death of the left, is that the fact that social and economic inequalities have grown in the last four decades of neoliberal capitalism enormously. It is well known, for example, that productivity during the last 50 years or so has grown more than six times, while the real wages, that is, minus inflation, or taking into account inflation, has shrunk from 15.72 cents, in US dollars, in 1973 to $14.15 in the year of 2000. So the productivity has grown six times, and real wages has shrunk. So in the US, the income of top 1% earners has more than doubled between 1980s and 2000. The average after-tax income increased by 176% from 1979 to 2005, while in Britain the top 1% of income earners have also doubled the share of the national income from 6.5% to 13% since 1982. In Lithuania, more recent statistics is that during the year of 2000, from 2000 to 2003, the profits of private businesses grew by 520%, while average wage grew by 9%. Furthermore, the 2008 global financial crisis has demonstrated the fatal flaws of neoliberal project, yet the left parties in Europe, especially social democratic parties, have spectacularly lost elections. So we're talking about Britain, European Parliament, Lithuania, Latvia's social democratic party collapsed, and so on. So, I mean, it is. And we can list these facts of growing inequalities further and further and further, but I think it will suffice to just to quote only these few facts to to say that, well, there is something fundamentally wrong with political left, given these inequalities, given that 40 years of neoliberal project has produced these massive concentration of wealth at the expense of us, I would put it this way. Why is it that left is not performing? Why is it that it's losing elections one after another? So this is the key question. Okay, so bearing in mind these questions, I would like to now spend a little bit of time in reflecting on the political landscape in my own country, in Lithuania, which I take it is very similar to to the rest of Baltic states, as well as Eastern Europe. And explain why the left is so weak, in a sense, ideologically as well as politically, in this area. It is well established fact that the past two decades in Eastern Europe have been marked by neoliberal reforms. And I mean by neoliberalism, here I mean first of all what David Harvey in his A Brief History of Neoliberalism has in mind. Basically it's social and economic policy conceptualized by Chicago School of Neoclassical Economics, which gained influence during the 70s and became influential ever since. And David Harvey defines neoliberalism in the following way, and I quote, "It holds that the social, neoliberalism holds that the social good, that the entire social good will be maximized by maximizing the reach and frequency of market transactions, and it seeks to bring all human action into the dominance of the market." So it's a kind of marketization of the society to the full, and endorsing privatization and deregulation and so on. So, of course, the key thing for us to remember is that, in a sense, the transition from totalitarian condition to a democratic condition two decades ago in Eastern Europe and in Lithuania, Latvia and Estonia happened, unfortunately, during the peak of neoliberal project. What it meant was that the endorsement of unfettered capitalism was uncritically and often blindly welcomed, not only by general public but also by the so-called progressive intellectuals, who were mostly pro-Americans, pro-NATO, pro-capitalist, or pro-Western. And to a certain extent, of course, it was inevitable. But I think 20 years later, back, we have to look at it with a pinch of salt. So the ideological slogan "the West is the best" meant the full endorsement of consumer capitalism, of market-based neoliberal reforms, a wild longing to join the European Union, and the emphatic rejection of everything Soviet. To a certain extent, as I said, it was inevitable. But the problem with this radical U-turn, which happened in the early 90s, was a difficulty in having a strong critical and independent political and intellectual left, able to question the ongoing neoliberal reforms advanced through the policies of shock therapy. The vast majority of social theorists and critics who were rightly against Soviet state capitalist regime, and that's how I would call Soviet Union, together with British New Left intellectuals and others, so it was a state capitalist regime. So the vast majority of these social theorists criticized this state capitalist regime, rightly, and the dominant ideology based on Lithuanian nationalism or East European nationalism and laissez-faire capitalism. Consequently, after the collapse of Soviet Union, the vast majority of former dissidents and social critics who saw themselves in opposition to this Soviet regime became what it is now called conservative liberals or neoconservatives in Western Europe. So during this transition, the rapid shock therapy reforms were welcomed and advanced. So for example, the agricultural sector was destroyed virtually overnight. Key industries were privatized during highly corrupt, rapid transition period. Borders were opened to all kinds of foreign imports, and price controls were removed while costs of basic goods immediately doubled and tripled. After 20 years of these reforms, the consequences largely still remain. The gap between rich and poor has grown enormously, and I mentioned some of these facts already. So the claim that I would like to make is that these changes were, as I said, inevitable, but also problematic, and the center of these reforms, unfortunately, were, at least in Lithuania, were a social democratic party. Prior to 2000, year 2000, Lithuanian Social Democratic Party, or the core of Social Democratic Party, was Lithuanian Labour Party, LDDP. And they won landslide victory in 1992 after the National Front, which gained the independence of Lithuania, lost spectacularly the elections, and they stayed pretty much in power for 13 consecutive years, or altogether they stayed during these 20 years of independence, Social Democratic Party, ex-communist. Then they joined in 2000. They merged two parties. LDDP became, this Labour Party became Social Democratic Party, and merged with a smaller and more socially oriented Social Democratic Party. But it's Algirdas Brazauskas party, who was the leading politician of Lithuania. He was a president and prime minister. And the best example to pinpoint what the policy have been advanced by this political party is the privatization of Akema Group, and Akema Group was the fertilizers producer, production of it's working in production of fertilizers, logistics, transportation, energy, and media, and it was a fertilizer producer in 1994, and what it was a completely untransparent privatization of it, and of course at the center of this privatization was the Social Democratic, then the Labour Party, supposedly left-wing political party. And friendship between these two men, Algirdas Brazauskas and Mr. Bronislovas Lubys, who's both of them are dead now, but kind of encapsulates symbolically what the Social Democratic Party stood for. During these 20 years, and it stood for pretty much privatization, deregulation, and corporate capitalism. So that's the kind of the context. And so, in 2007, in 2006, things started to change in a sense that a small group of intellectually minded young people, us, which we called ourselves the New Lab 95. What we did was we wrote a manifesto, a New Lab 95 manifesto, which is on our webpage there, 45 theses. But we just said, expressed our concern about Lithuanian politics and did a small performance at a Frank Zappa sculpture in Vilnius. And we didn't expect any attention at all, but apparently what happened was a lot of media attention followed. And so we were forced, in a sense, to articulate and defend our views in public, on the radio, on TV, and so on and so forth. And the reason for that was precisely that we came and said, look, for a healthy European society, you need strong political left. And the current political left is choking with nomenclatura, and it's not doing its job. I mean, if anything, it's doing the reverse thing. So that's why I would, in a sense, call the New Left 95 as a master signifier of the Lithuanian political left. And I'll try briefly to explain what I mean. The French iconic psychoanalyst Jacques Lacan conceptualized master signifier as the phallic signifier without a signified. Ordinary signifiers, phonetic or visual bearers of meanings, of what is signified, are linked to one another in the chain of signs, which from our interpretive linguistic grid enable us to make sense of the world around us. One sign is linked and could be explained with reference to a series of other signs and meanings. Master signifier is a pointing finger that initiates the chain of ordinary signifiers, but itself is not a part of this chain. It enables the subject to identify with the signifier the most and plays the key role in subject's linguistic ability to ascribe meaning to the world. I know that it's a little bit dense, but just bear with me, please. It is like a symbolic father figure whose function is to designate an empty, threatening sound that disrupts the existing net of meanings through its arbitrary interruption. And a Lacanian intuition is that a master signifier is a phallic signifier, as a phallic signifier, is both unstable and tends to be repressed through the process of signification of the net of ordinary signifiers. So in a sense, it's a kind of, an empty threatening sound which disrupts the ordinary language and ordinary signifiers. So that's what in a sense it was. And the importance of New Left at that time was precisely that we came and said what needed to be said. And of course, what we stood for was all these progressive values and progressive principles, such as poor record of human rights, fighting for the human rights, especially workers' rights, exploitation, inequality, social justice, but also LGBT rights, and it was still at that time a taboo in Lithuania, given that it was only 2 years when Lithuania joined the EU. What happened later, after let's say 4 or 5 years, that things started to change. So what the importance of this master signifier was that Social Democratic Party started to change. I mean, of course, mainly because it is now in the opposition, and so it is good for the party to. It's always easier for social democratic parties to become more left-wing, more socially oriented when they are in the opposition. So that's, of course, the main reason. But I would say that another reason was precisely that discourse has been shifted, because political discourse has been shifted because of the activity of the new left. First of all, discursive grassroots kind of activity of the new left. Okay, and I would like to end pretty much in couple of minutes. But before I stop, I would still need to address the issue: how can the dead left dance? Now, my claim would be that what we need to do is really to get back to bigger master signifier, and the biggest master signifier of the left, whether we like it or not, is Karl Marx, and the reason for that is that, the simple reason would be this: that Anya talked about welfare state at the beginning, but if we look at the history of welfare state, we see that welfare state was a compromise. It was a compromise between revolutionary, I consciously stress this point, revolutionary labor movement, socialist parties, social democratic parties, which were at that time, before the Second World War, and after the Second World War, largely Marxist. They aimed for something more than welfare state. And so because they were aiming for something more, and because they had more charm and more political will to ask and dream for more, the welfare state was achieved. And the compromise was, and it was achieved not through social dialogue. And of course, social dialogue was part of it, but social dialogue was the consequence of the struggle that workers and trade unions engaged in before Second World War and after the Second World War. After the Second World War, of course, the welfare state was created, but it was building up the road, so to speak, for the welfare state, which was important. And this road was the struggle. Strikes, lockouts, and so on. So my point is that I think today the circle, historical circle, came back. And my kind of prediction would be that 21st century, or the beginning of 21st century, is very similar to the beginning of 20th century, when I don't want to be a bad prophet here, but when the First World War erupted, but there are these signs, and the signs of the 20th century, of the beginning of 20th century, in the 21st century, are the massive inequalities that I was talking about, on the one hand, but also the rise of nationalism. And what we see, for example, in Lithuania today is that fascist or neo-fascist, neo-Nazi groups who are marching on the day of every year on the Independence Day, on the 11th of March, have started to include this left-wing economic discourse, about exploitation of talking against capitalism and so on. And on the way to Riga in the car, I was incidentally reading Martin Heidegger's German philosopher's terrible address when he was a rector in 1933 to a trade union people, and you know, it's it's one-to-one what some of these neo-Nazis are talking today in Lithuania. You know, they're appealing to the solidarity and to the comradeships of the workers, but of course they are, and the interpretation there is completely nationalistic. So there are these important dangers for the left, precisely because the socio-economic and political reality is as it is, and massive inequalities and disparities of wealth. But on the other hand is, you know, the weakness of the left. And so my point would be that we have to, that the left should show solidarity and be united. That's for sure. But also that it has to become more radical. And one way of doing it is, and especially in Eastern Europe, is rereading Marx in a completely fresh way. Of course, forgetting and rejecting and criticizing him for the stupidities and mistakes he did. And of course there are stupidities and mistakes that that are full in Marx, but still be critical. Critical and yet get back to Marx. Because Marx is important for many reasons, and one of them is, if you read Das Kapital, for example, is there is value of the product is created by labor, so it's labor that is important, and whereas trade unions today in Lithuania but elsewhere, they lost this understanding that, well, no, commodities and values are produced by us, by ordinary workers. And of course, we can discuss a bit later about the transition from industrial to post-industrial society and the massive differences between these two societies. Sure, but I would still say that, I mean, it doesn't matter what kind of employee you are, whether an unskilled or manual laborer or an intellectual laborer, we still, at least according to, for example, French Marxist Daniel Ben Said, we are still of laborers, wage laborers, so to speak. So at least formally, we are working people, and I know that for some Eastern Europeans it could sound too Soviet, but it's not. And I think this is the key thing for especially East European left, is to get rid of the remnants of Soviet past and look at the European left in a new way and become more radical.
Thank you very much. I think it has been an extremely rich presentation, so I will have difficulties to summarize it and challenge you in the same time, and I have to give the floor to the second speaker who has just arrived. Pierre, welcome with us. I've introduced you already before to give you a brief feeling of what we've been talking until now this morning. Professor Bielski has put forward a challenge: is social democracy dead? And he assumed that it is at the moment. But he left us with a hopeful note that as long as we get radical, strong, and get back to our roots with the new interpretation and new take on core literature such as Karl Marx, we will be able to spring into action. I think there have been several points mentioned on the way to this, let's say, key motto that I would see as the message coming also from your presentation. We've been talking about the question of the neoliberal discourse and neoliberal capitalism, and pretty much in the background of the presentation I could sense this question: how is it possible that we see such an overwhelming economic financial crisis and social democracy has not been able to put forward its story? I think that partially it's because we expect that at the moment the crisis is there, people will believe that social democracy is the option. Of course, nothing works there by default automatically, but the fact remains, as Professor Bierskis was saying that the last 10 years is the 10 years that we observe not only loss in the elections, but actually total deterioration of the parties as far as we look at the membership, as far as we look at their impact in the society and their presence in the political discourse. We've been talking about the diversity of traditions and the question of the Central and Eastern Europe specificity, which is what interests us very much around this table, of what is specific about this region. We were talking, of course, about a bit of a painful past, the transition of the parties, and here there is a big diversity. I think we didn't touch upon that, but within the Central and Eastern Europe, we of course have the parties that turned from being the communist one to the social democratic one, and hence trying to re-establish themselves. They were very much susceptible to the arguments of liberalization, and Professor Bielskis was talking about the privatization, deregulation, and all the attractive things that the left also embarked on. That was set in the context of the Manifesto New Left 1995 in Lithuania, that I would like to invite everyone to come back to and to read, not only Marx, but also a bit of the recent classics. We've been talking also about the question of credibility in politics, because of differentiation of policies and differentiation of the discourse. We are in the opposition, we all know that. The moment we get into the opposition as social democrats, we are saying, well, now we will be ideological. We might have stepped aside a little bit, but now we will renew and everything will be ideological and pure. So can a renewal process take place within, in between the elections? And the last interesting thing, which I think very much comes to your profile as coming also from the trade unions background, is this question of, well, welfare state, we talked about it this morning, the question of a compromise. So social democracy reaching the compromise and trying, in fact, to ensure social peace through making, through being this interlink in between the world of capital and labor. And the question would be, is social democracy and trade unions, are we still on the same page? Are we still able to ensure this social peace, or is it actually true that capitalism has changed social democracy a bit more than social democracy changed capitalism in the last 2 centuries? The floor is yours.